All right, welcome back, everybody. We are back here on the Fantasy Hockey Taxi Squad, presented by the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Team. And we are here to hit you up this week with next week's Week 2 preview and give you guys all the ins and outs of what we see from a scheduling standpoint, a streaming standpoint, and just the odds and ends and storylines and trends that are going on in the league as we start to see light at the end of the tunnel for week one, this being Thursday, October 12th. Jay, why don't you turn on the fares and let's get into it. Welcome in, everybody, and the Five Hole Taxi Squad is here. We are your hosts, Craig, Alan, and Jay. Welcome in, guys. How's it going? Night 3 of the hockey season is upon us. You know, I'm currently got the Florida and Minnesota game on in the background. How are you guys feeling? How are we doing
now
tonight,
this boys? Is the chaos I'm used to watching, like 5 games going on at once.
Yeah, oh my goodness, definitely watching those scoreboards as well, like flipping up and down. That's the problem with too many fantasy leagues at the same time. I guess Craig might know a little bit about that.
Yeah, just before we dive into the week preview, you know, I just want to tell everybody out there, and I told the boys before we jumped into it, you know, Jack Hughes is the truth. Watch out for him chasing down the Rocket this year, as well as maybe the Hart too. But that guy is really good at hockey, throwing the Devils on his back tonight for their opening night win. I digress. We're here tonight to do the week 2 preview for next week, try to help you guys out there with scheduling and streaming opportunity that's out there for you guys to look at schedule maximization and get ahead of the game against your opponents next week from games played and capitalizing on where we see the best opportunities. But before we jump in, you know, as we announced on the weekend preview, we are looking to do our first mailbag. We have put that out in the Five Hole Fantasy Hockey Discord. We've put that out on Twitter. So please reach out to us if you have any burning questions from a fantasy standpoint, either in the Discord or through Twitter. We'll be doing that show in the coming days, and we really look forward to interacting with you guys a little bit more and hearing where your head's at through week one and out of week one, and see how we can help you guys a bit further as we all are pursuing our fantasy championships. So let's dive in here with the week 2 preview. I'll start us off here, boys, with some injuries and some storylines in the league. You know, I'm just going to hit the first one because it's live and it's happening, and I'm sure everybody's seen it if they are tracking the games tonight. Zach Werenski, man, the guy's got no luck. Left tonight's game. Thank goodness it was a quad contusion and not a serious knee injury by the looks of it. But it was a knee-on-knee hit by Garnet Hathaway behind the net. It looked pretty rough to begin with, but like I said, it looks like he's going to be day-to-day. That hurts me deep down. As Jay said, I've got him in 4 out of my 13 leagues, so I'm going to have to put some time in on the waivers myself to maybe find some D spot starts if he misses any time. Has a little bit of a bump in the road, but hopefully quad contusion, he can bounce right back from that and still make a difference with the Jackets this year. And then Taylor Hall, I didn't really see the play, but he's week to week with an upper body injury after a hit from Brandon Carlo. Top line, top power play with Bedard coming off of his first goal. I think everybody was hoping Hall could be part of that, but hey, here we are. He's a week to week, and who knows when he's going to be back. Usually week to week is not a good thing, but I think, you know, this gives a couple of other guys on the Hawks a little bit more opportunity to shine, I think. Another guy that here at the Taxi Squad, we were all high on going into a contract year. Kings actually just put him on long-term IR, which means he's out at least 4 weeks. He's eligible to come back on their home game on November 8th, which is Victor Arvidsson. Looks like that knee might be a little bit worse than first expected. Does that give opportunity to some of their young guys, or does that just jig around the lines a little bit more? I know they just called up Alex Trucott and Brent Clark today. sending down Kaliev, and I can't remember the second guy in that kind of lineup shuffle after they announced Arvidsson was going on long-term IR. I think the majority of their top nine stays the same. It's just Trukot probably takes that spot on the Deneau-Moore line and probably his spot on the second power play. I don't know who's taking the spot on the first power play because that's where he was. So just keep an eye out on that to see who gets that power play one deployment, even though the Kings do roll both power play units fairly evenly. Whoever gets that left wing spot on that power play will have the better opportunity to play with the Kings' top players. A couple other storylines that we were following, and the Buffalo taking another step to lock up another core piece, signing Owen Power to a 7-year, $8.35 million contract. That's big money for a young kid that's just coming into his sophomore year. He did look the part last year. I think, like we spoke about him on the pod a few times in terms of being the quote-unquote handcuff for PP1 to Dahlin, if Dahlin were ever to go down. Another up-and-coming team that's looking to compete now, locking up their young core. They've got Samuelson locked up. They've got Power locked up. They've got Dahlin locked up, you know, all under the age of 24 years old.
I saw on Twitter today, it was like that core is locked up till 2030. Like that's ridiculous.
That includes Tage Thompson. That includes Jeff Skinner. That includes Dylan Cousins. Like that is a very nice core. Although we were talking before we jumped on, they did not look great tonight. 5-1 loss to the Rangers. The Rangers might still be good, everybody, just as a PSA to the listeners out there. And Buffalo might still have some defensive issues because young Devin Levi was hung out to dry several times tonight. They might have some things to fix, just like we kind of discussed in the division previews. But young team, some things to kind of sort out, and a young goaltender that they're leaning on. I'm sure they're going to be okay. It is still very, very early. Any other thoughts on tonight's games?
Yeah, no surprise to me. Bob is a pumpkin.
Yeah, I think Florida looks a little bit shaky without, not surprisingly, without Montour and Ekblad, they look a little shaky. They've got a couple of new pieces in their forward group that maybe might need some time to gel with their existing pieces. Yeah, they don't look good right now. And if it wasn't for that callback midway through the second, it'd be 3-0 Wild. So not great. I don't know, Jay, do you want to touch on your boy Grubauer? You know, the Kraken, maybe a little sleepy to start the season.
The big one still at the end with the teams and all that is really just to follow heavily on that PP1 time and just check to see. I think it's sometimes unfortunate when, I guess, the refs swallow the whistles on a particular team and we're able to see the run and see which players are going to be given what ice time, right? But it's hard to, like, you know, trash a player completely after one or two games, right?
Oh, no. Yeah, Jack Campbell's bad. Jack Campbell is bad, and I'm not going to let that man hurt me anymore.
I was going to say, that was a perfect transition to our next talking point was, ouch, Jack Campbell and the Oilers might have stumbled out of the gates, and preseason does not equal regular season, especially for goalies. I do feel bad for Vancouver coming into Saturday's matchup because they do play again. I would imagine McDavid and Draisaitl are going to be pretty bad and fired up for that game. I would hope for a much closer contest than the 8-1 shellacking. Good for whoever right now is playing Connor McDavid in week one, that he hasn't had an opportunity to explode yet. But hey, on the flip side, Demko looked really good, and apparently he was battling the flu. Apparently he was like,
it's not even his final form, and, man.
So maybe Vancouver might be a little sneaky good this year in terms of their depth in front of the man. And if he's bouncing back to the caliber he was 2 years ago, just another Western Conference team for the Oilers to meet Jay's expectations in his sneaky fandom. But we shall see.
Come on, Craig. Like, let's be real here, too. The Oilers only scored one goal, and McDry are still on a point per game pace. So they're rolling.
We told you, we know who Jack Campbell is. and we can stick to that Leafs bias. And look what he still is. It looks like might be Skinner's net to hold after that performance. And then just another note from tonight's game as we were watching live before we jumped into the pod here. You know, I'm going to just give a shout out to Kirill Merchenko. He didn't get a lot of total deployment in terms of time on ice tonight, just under 15 minutes. But he was tied with Line A or percentage of power play time. And he did finish the game with 4 shots on net and 2 assists and 1 block. So I think if he can get up into the top 6, which is where he was in the preseason, you got a sneaky, viable right winger. Now, we were talking about a little bit too early, and yes, we know we're in the first week of the season, but a couple of guys that we wanted to highlight, and I'm not going to say long-term holds. I'm going to say based on what we have seen in an extremely small sample size, these 3 individuals we wanted to put somewhere else other than watch list, whether, and we're going to call them 3 guys that are could be value above replacement for your bench roster positions. I've even seen a couple of them being heavily discussed in the 5-hole fantasy hockey Discord and a couple of other spaces like Twitter in terms of what to do with these guys. And number 1 is Ryan Donato, currently center only, but he's playing on the top line with Bedard. Through 2 games, he has averaged over 18 minutes total time on ice, averaging 3.5 shots per game. He has a goal and assist through 2 games. He has 2 hits, 1 block. He is on line 1 and PP1. And now I think this role he has on the right side of Bedard is even more solidified because of the Hall injury. He's got a real opportunity to show that he belongs on the right side of Bedard here. If he stays there, at some point Yahoo will give him the dual eligibility of center and right wing. That makes him even more valuable. Second guy, I know he's near and dear to Alan's heart, Seth Jarvis, still very lowly owned, which is shocking. Still only like 32% owned from when I was looking at the show notes. He led all Carolina Hurricanes in their first game on time on ice. All of them. He had more time on ice than everybody. He is still line 1. He is still PP1. He had 4 shots on goal. He had 7 hits. And he had 1 assist playing with Aho. And he's on the right side of their PP1. I'm not going to say that he's going to maintain the 21-49 time on ice that he got in game 1 because of the Brind'Amour blender. But if this is how he's going to be utilized, even if his ice time drops to 18 and he can continue to shoot and be involved in the game from a hits perspective like this, pick this guy up. I would imagine he is a value above replacement for somebody on the bottom of your bench due to right wing scarcity and his dual eligibility and his position on this roster, especially after a 5-goal output from the Canes in their opening game. And the last guy, we have 2 more. That's right. I forgot about the special edition. The one guy that I'm really high on and I've spoke about a lot is Gabe Vilardi with the Winnipeg Jets. Another guy, he's center only right now, but I think if his deployment holds, he will be the same as Donato. He will get right wing eligibility, making him dual eligible. He's dual eligible in Fantrax already. He was 2nd in time on ice amongst all Jets forwards in their first game with just over 21 minutes. He had 7 shots on goal, and he's deployed currently on line 1 with Scheifele and Connor and on power play 1 with all their other best players. And he had the same power play timeshare as Connor in game 1 at 64% of the power play available time on ice. If that deployment holds in any state, we're talking breakout season for sure for this young fella now that he's getting prime deployment. Our last guy to consider, as long as he's there, even though they haven't scored tonight, but Montour and Ekblad both out until at the earliest, sometime in November, is OEL, Oliver Ekman-Larsson. He is holding, looks to be firmly planted in the top power play with the Florida Panthers, and he's only 13% owned. Man, I might go pick this guy up tomorrow morning to replace Rowinski and all these in all these leagues I lost him in, or at least Forsling for that matter. Just as you know, as we know, Forsling's going to get probably much more ice time than him at even strength. But, you know, Alan mentioned it before we started recording. As long as he's holding that position with the likes of Barkov, Rodriguez, Sam Reinhart, and Matthew Tkachuk, you want a piece of that action, I would imagine, is very viable. And I'm going to throw that out here, and I hope the guys would agree with me. I would rather have him as my fourth defenseman than Kalen Addison.
Yes.
Because at least he does something peripherally. Kalen Addison doesn't even have a shot tonight yet, which is not surprising, but he also doesn't have a hit or doesn't have a block. So that ain't good, even if he is a QB1 quarterback. And Minnesota already has a power play goal, and it's only the three forwards that touch the puck. That is our news and notes. That is our storylines. That is our trends. That is our value above replacement guys from the squad for your consideration. Now I give it to you, Alan. Take us through the scheduling for week 2. Talk to us a little bit about our streaming opportunities for the people out there.
Yeah, this week 2 is going to look much more like a normal week. The teams with 4 games are Arizona, Calgary, and Detroit. The worst schedules, there are some teams with 2 games, Montreal, Jersey, Ottawa, Pittsburgh, and St. Louis. All but 2 teams play on Saturday, Calgary and New Jersey. But out of those best schedules, Calgary and Detroit have 3 off nights. Arizona has 1. But even in those bad schedules, Montreal and St. Louis are both on busy days, but Jersey's 2 games are both on off days. Streamers, from a holistic level, I'd say Andrew Mangiapane on Calgary, still 24% owned, line 3, power play 2, but he did see some time with Lindholm and Huberto.
Sorry to jump in there. Also, this morning in Calgary's practice, he was actually on line 1 with Huberto and Lindholm and practicing with the top power play unit.
Well, there we
go.
So that's already changed.
Even juicier for Mangiapane from a streaming.
Yeah, time. And also on Calgary, Matt Coronato, only 6% owned. And he's, at least last I looked, line 2, power play 1 on even strength. He had a 13:31 time on ice in that first game, but 3:36 on the power play, which is definitely like top unit time. From Detroit, JT Compher, just have someone, because that whole top line of DeBrincat, Larkin, and Perron are mostly taken. But JT Compher is 25% owned, line 2, power play 2. But I would still say Perron, Raymond, and Ghost are go-checks. From the Coyotes, hopefully, last call, Nick Schmaltz, center right wing, 27%, line 1, power play 1. Those guys don't really grow on trees. So, hey, it's not a great team, but he's got that primo deploymento. Some honorable mentions, Jersey, Sharon Govich, Blake Coleman, again, Barrett Hayton and Logan Cooley on Arizona, and your 0G, the goalie streams of the week. If you're trying to get some spot starts, Dan Vladar in Calgary, should see one of Buffalo or Columbus. And I know they have 4 games, so there's always that chance he could get a second start that week. But from Arizona, Connor Ingram. Again, definitely see one start in that back-to-back. And then they also have a game against Anaheim later in the week. Perfect opportunity to throw him in there. So he may get 2 starts. And then Semyon Varlamov of the Islanders should see either Jersey or Buffalo in that back-to-back. Not the easiest of opponents, but he is out there. Our big boy banger streamers, Martin Fehervari, defenseman on Washington. Last season, he hit 3 hits a game, 2 blocks a game. Definitely fills that cat coverage. Tom Wilson, he's 47% owned, so kind of right on the fence of being available to you. But line 2, power play 2, 3 hits and a block a game last year. Calgary, Mackenzie Weegar, 2 hits and 4 blocks in that earlier game. Obviously, will not continue to shoot 100%, but he is shooting, and that's, you'll get goals that way. And then Jason Zucker on Arizona, left wing, 2.5 hits per game last year, line 2 with that kind of points upside. I will hand it over to Jay to get in some deep dive streaming strategy.
Oh, man. Yeah, here I am, like, still pecking away.
I know. I'm like, man, my stuff's moving.
There's a lot to unpack. there's so much to unpack with week one and week two, and the big gist essentially rolls down to the problem with week one. There is no one player to pick so that you can get both the Friday and the Sunday for week one. And with, again, 28 teams playing on Saturday, it's slim pickings for one singular player if you only have one streaming spot to snag some additional points that will make or break the difference in your weeks. So again, as we've always mentioned before, go look ahead at your team, go look ahead at your matchup and see what is the situation, and to help you either strategically win your week, give up your week, and use additional ads for week two. Keep in mind, first of all, the NHL does not play. The NHL plays back-to-backs, but the NHL does not play back-to-back-to-backs. So what this means is that if you are coming into your week on Saturday evening or Sunday morning, you will have to quickly come to a decision, if you have additional ads, on whether or not you're going to try to one of three things, right? It's you're either going to use your ad to win week one, to shore up a win in week one, or you're going to be using your last week one ad to throw week one and think ahead to week two. So the first one is, if you are trying to use the ad to win your week one, just as much as 28 teams are playing on Saturday, only four teams, the last four teams, are going to be playing on Sunday, which means you're only going to be looking at the players from Anaheim, Ottawa, Tampa Bay, or Carolina to win your week one. And if that's your case, my goodness, you are looking at a week one gold mine. I'm taking some of these off of Yahoo owned rostered percentages, but I'm just going to read out some of these names, and they won't be all there in your league, but go take a look. There is immense value. Anaheim. Big boy banger top dog Rod Kogut is 45%. That means half your leagues, yeah, he's gonna be owned already, but in over half of those leagues, he's still out there. King of the bangs. Take him and literally smash your way to victory. Vetrano plays on the power play, plays on the penalty kill. He's gonna get bangs, he's gonna get hits, he's gonna get some power play run. Mason McTavish, Adam Henrique. Mason McTavish gets power play one time. Adam Henrique gets both. He gets three. He gets line one, power play one, and penalty kill one time. And he is 2% owned on the Anaheim Ducks. Other teams like Ottawa, there's Jake Sanderson, Dominic Kubalik, Ridley Greig. All these players I listed are a just go check, but all of the players I listed give you power play time and either D1 or line 2 deployment. Tampa Bay's got a couple of names. There's the game 1 darling Nicholas Paul, 20% owned, power play 1. That is a steal. 20% owned means 4 out of 5 leagues don't have him rostered. Tanner Janot is a bang daddy. Line 4, but he still gets PP2. Anthony Cirelli gets PP2. Connor Sheary, still PP2. All these guys are 2% owned. Look for some of these guys, and I haven't even gotten to Carolina. My goodness, 34% owned, but line 1, PP1, Seth Jarvis, even with the Brind'Amour blender. Like, come on. Like, you got to roll your dice a little bit with such a good schedule. Now, okay, if you're going to lose it, none of this matters. We're going to move on. If you're going to win it, look for those four teams. Rolling into week two, if you picked Anaheim, that's a great team purely because Anaheim has nothing in the early rounds of week two. Nothing. The first game they play in week two is Thursday. They still play three games, but they only play on Thursday, which means Anaheim is a prime team to target on the waiver wire. Go ham with those off-night teams in the beginning with Arizona and Detroit. Get two games early in the week with all the players that Alan just mentioned, right? With your Nick Schmaltz with your Logan Cooley role, with your, I don't know if Barrett Hayton, line one, power play one is still around, but take him too. Detroit is, it's going to be a little tough to get some of the Detroit players if we're just snagging a couple of those guys. There's who? Maybe Gus Despair is still around?
Yeah, no, I knew Gus Bear was pretty highly owned when I checked earlier today.
Yeah.
The one guy that's sneaky from Detroit is Daniel Sprong. He also scored tonight. He had two shots on goal. He had just under 15 minutes time on ice. He's on their third line, but he is on their second power play unit. And this is a guy that we noted in the division previews where, and I just went back and checked a couple of notes here. He was top 12, or he was 12th in the entire league last year in points per 60. His 5-on-5 shooting percentage is 12.4, which was through the roof for a third line player. But to me, that means he's a very efficient shooter when he shoots, and he can drive play by himself. So a little sneaky guy that, you know, especially in your deeper leagues, if you're looking for a streamer with a 4-game schedule, Daniel Sprong is going to be there and be available. He's going to have shots on goal with some points upside. And I believe he's also right wing, which is position scarcity, as Jay loves to point out too.
JT Comfort as well is great value. He's line 2, PP2, PK1, and he's dual eligible on both wings, left wing and right wing. 26% owned, probably available. Two teams to target for week 2 early, and I would say this, strategize this with your available ads, but potential strategies you could roll into would be if you snagged Anaheim on Sunday on week 1, that means that you would have a spot already devoted to streaming. That's when you want to get at least 2 games on the next 3 nights. Arizona's got the Monday, Tuesday, which is another good way to tackle and bang on, but 9 games are going on Tuesday as well, so it might be hard to fit in some of those teams. But there's only 2 teams that are going to play on Mondays and Wednesdays. And those teams are Detroit and Washington. Washington's actually not that great in terms of holding for the full week, but what you could do is you can devote that streaming spot to roster either a Detroit player or a Washington player for Monday, hold them through for the Wednesday game, and then drop them and pick up Anaheim or Calgary players. Calgary also has a very juicy off-night schedule in the back half of the week where they play on Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. And I guess you're picking up on the big, big juicy tidbits, right? Which is the Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday gambit. Anytime you can get those 2 anchors locked on in an ad, boom, you are golden. But Washington, my goodness, Dylan Strome, line 3 PP1, 30% owned. Evgeny Kuznetsov, 33% owned. Line 2 PP2 PK1. There's also TJ Oshie, Rasmus Sandin, Tom Wilson's, like, and Rasmus Sandin are hovering around. They're just go check type of player. But I haven't said the best of all, and maybe this guy is the guy that's just going to be racketing it up. That's Nicholas Backstrom. Nicholas Backstrom, line 1, power play 1, 7% owned. Amazing early week 2 scheduling. Pick him up, drop him Thursday morning, take on a Calgary Flame, take on an Anaheim Duck, or a Boston Bruin, right? Those are the 3 teams that play 3 games from Thursday onward in week 2. It is bang on. I've given it a big run. I'll throw it back to Craig.
No, I love it. I love it. I think you're giving the people some options and opportunity to maximize scheduling and maximize their streamers and maybe getting three for the price of one if they do it effectively with those three teams that you named, Anaheim, Washington, and Calgary, based on the off nights and how their schedules are split going into next week. And I think, too, with the weird schedule to finish off this week with nobody playing Friday, Sunday, and that packed schedule Saturday, you're just going to have all your studs in on Saturday anyways. So I think it's definitely a week rolling into week two where you can look to carry your last ad into the following week. And that's a great opportunity to, you know, start off week two with a couple of extra games over your opponent. With the deep dive into the streamers, you know, Alan, I really liked Coronado, you know, although his initial time on ice is a little low, he was getting a huge run on PP1. I think he had four shots on goal in Calgary's opening night. So he still got some good sneaky upside, especially for power play points if he can hold that. I actually like Arizona's schedule. I think, you know, if I was to pick a 0G candidate for the week, Vajmelka for sure. I might even do that myself because it looks like a couple of my leagues I might be short on starts this week and I might just hold him for next week, at least to get the first two games. And Ingram, their schedule is not too hard, but not too soft next week. So you might get a couple of sneaky wins. I think they have several home games next week as well, if I'm not mistaken. And then they've got all of those prime top six players from a streaming standpoint having four games next week that are all available. And watch for Logan Cooley to pop off next week. I'm not going to say he's going to supplant Barrett Hayton right away, but we all agreed at some point he's taking that 1C spot, and I think that just elevates Keller and Schmaltz even further once Cooley gets onto that line permanently. I really like what we're putting out there. Last but not least is some watch list dudes. I think we spoke on Tommy Novak from the Nashville Predators. He had three shots on goal and one goal in the Preds opening night on the power play. And he's line three and power play two. I think the consensus here on the taxi squad is at some point he does take 1C from Ryan O'Reilly. We don't know if that's for sure going to happen, but I think he can be a viable contributor and at least get the 2C there and be in their top six. And I think he becomes a viable option on their PP1. And then Jay's not going to like this, but I am going to say a Habs name because he did have a hell of a game and a really nice start. Kirby Dach, he was second in time on ice amongst forwards in the Habs in their first game with just over 21 and a half minutes. He had three shots on goal. He had three hits. He had two assists, all from line two, centering line two, and on the first power play. If that deployment continues, I think you may be seeing the kid that everybody was hoping to see in Chicago just based on time on ice alone, let alone his ability to play with Suzuki and Caulfield. Mike Matheson looked really good in that game as a deep power play one quarterback, defenseman, a guy you want to go see if you can just go check or see if he's available out there, especially if you're, in my case, facing a Rowinski injury with an unknown timeline. And then a couple of guys just to note from tonight. You know, we were talking offline, Kirill Merchenko from the Columbus Blue Jackets. Yes, he had under 15 minutes time on ice, but he had two assists. He had three shots on goal. He was getting run on the power play as well. Alexis Lafreniere from the New York Rangers, just under 15 minutes on ice, three shots on goal. He scored a goal tonight. And Philip Hedl from the Rangers, he also had an assist. He had 16 minutes of time on ice. You know, some sneaky offensive depth from the Rangers, who is an extremely deep offensive team. Three guys that I know are readily available that you might want to either just go check. I think Alan and I spoke to a listener on Twitter actually today, and thank God we told him to hold Lafreniere through this game and then pick up Vilardi, because he might get a little mad at us if we said drop Lafreniere today and pick up Vilardi. But that was not our advice. So, yes, power to us, Alan. We gave him the right advice because he got a goal and three shots on goal.
I'd say looking ahead, even further ahead, Montreal has four games next week. Dude, I'd watch list Arber Xhekaj Wi-Fi. A defenseman's going to be much easier to slip in, especially if you have hits and blocks in your league. And Pims, because he likes to fight too.
I would even say like Kirby Dach and Wi-Fi, if you are in the driver's seat of your matchup come Sunday, to Jay's strategic advice, you can add one or both of them depending on the needs and the setup of your league for Sunday and run with them for the four days in your
week two, right?
They're going to be viable, I think, while you guys were talking. Mike Matheson, I don't think he's heavily owned. He looked really good, man. He had like 26 minutes on ice. Like, he had tons of minutes.
Well, God, he was chugging. Didn't Wi-Fi get like a misconduct or something and was out for half the game?
Yeah, he fought Reeves and got kicked out. He only had 9 minutes of time on ice. So, but he was tossing Reeves around like a rag doll. That kid is a monster.
It's a good thing Toronto paid extra for that physicality, man.
Look, I think as much as we preach patience in the week one preview and heading into the weekend preview, I think it's time to really consider where your streaming opportunities are going to come from on your bench. I don't think you need to jump to anything too aggressively unless you're coming off like a really bad loss and you really want to bounce back win. You know, maximizing games played and schedule maximization is probably how you give yourself the best chance to do that. But, you know, again, we're super early, so we need to also be patient and we need to be smart. And I think we go back to the same advice we gave, as simple as could be, is just to find that one spot on your roster where you can stream from. And if that allows you, as the season progresses, to open up a second spot, whether that's due to injury or underperformance, then so be it. But don't go full scorched earth and look to burn your bench down in week two of the year just to get games played, right? There's going to be some guys that are coming off slow starts this week that are studs, and you got to wait for them to be studs, right? Like, look at last year's examples, Sam Reinhart off to a disgustingly slow start. And I would imagine many people out there, including myself, hung on to him through that painful stretch. And eventually he came out of it, but it did take much, much longer than a player of his caliber should. So maybe don't be that patient, but be patient, everybody. Enjoy it. Hockey is back. Any closing thoughts, guys, before we wrap tonight?
I think a big thing with patience as well is the patience needs to have a rhyme and a reason. We mentioned Montreal as well, and honestly, the big thing with Montreal is it's the opportunity, right? Matheson, and actually everybody knows about my thoughts on Cole Caulfield, and I might be quickly getting burned, right? With the two goals, one of which a toe hung a bit offside and eliminated it, right? But it was functionally what? A called off goal and a goal that counted for Cole Caulfield in game one. He looked sharp, right? This is showcasing a solid, solid, talented scorer. And if the size and if the body holds up in the frame, this looks, well, he's currently what? On point per game pace after one game. But this guy looks good, right? Hopefully he can keep it up over the season. Prove me wrong, Cole Caulfield. It was never his ability as opposed to the draft ADP ranking and the ownership percentage. So if we're talking about patience, the big thing we should be patient with is the existing ice time, existing deployment. Check those box scores. One that's going to get me pretty interested, for example, is he's on the line 3. Sure, that really sucks. But he's 1% owned. He's on the power play, first power play, and first penalty kill, PP1, PK1. 1% owned on the Canadiens, Sean Monahan. That seems like something.
Monahan,
a
song.
On a good stream, good schedule.
I need to walk Jay off of that take before the week 3 preview. My God.
But look at the deployment. No. If he gets that all season, anchored, it's not possible on a power play 1 for Cole Caulfield to simultaneously rocket to the moon and for Sean Monahan to be licking dirt, right? It's if that power play clicks, if that team clicks, you want pieces that are not owned that are still going to be part and parcel adding in those pieces, right? So check the box scores. If you're patient, be patient for a reason. Don't be the person stuck holding on when Hedman eventually loses PP1.
No, don't.
Look, I think our last piece of advice before we sign off for this episode is just, other than patience, it's also don't chase points, right? Unless it's from a bona fide star and you have an opportunity to trade for them, right? Like, everybody's hyped on this Besser 4-point goal, this 4-goal output that he had in an 8-point onslaught, or 7-goal, you know, an 8-1 win from the Canucks. Yes, he looks like he's got line 2 and power play 1 deployment, but I was having this conversation with a listener after that game, and I said, this is the guy, remember, I think he's still a show me, right? He's not dual eligible. He's only a right wing. Yes, he's shown flashes, but he's never played 82 games. He's never scored over 30 goals. There's always a question mark around, is this truly him, or is he a hot and cold player, right? And chasing yesterday's points, and yes, we're always looking for hot guys and who's on fire. You want to see that a little bit more on a consistent basis before it's like, yes, I need to lock this guy in on my roster moving forward, because then what you're doing is you might be short falling yourself from a streaming perspective if you really are, oh, this guy's going to do this after one game, right? It's more of, like Jay said, you need to look at deployment, you need to look on time on ice, you need to look at shots on goal, more of those underlying numbers and or where they are deployed in the lineup versus what they did yesterday. Those types of trends, right? As like, for instance, like Fantilli, he had just under 15 minutes of ice time tonight, but he looked strong. He had an assist. He had a couple shots on goal. He had a block. And now you monitor that. He's actually 44% owned, which has gone up quite a bit over the last few days, being center only eligible. But you now monitor that. Does he start to see more time on ice as the next couple of weeks go on? Because as we mentioned in the division previews, from a Columbus standpoint, Jenner got all the time on ice from the centers, right? He was almost 22 minutes, and he's still doing Jenner things. So you just have to monitor, I think, reality versus past performance of these fringe players, right, that you're thinking about streaming. Most likely, they'll be streamers for the majority of the season because that's what they are, right? They're going to be hot and cold regardless of their opportunity. You're going to have a couple of guys that will be holds long-term, like we highlighted Donato, Velarde, OEL, and Seth Jarvis, of course. I'm shocked that his ownership is not where Fantilli is, to be honest, being dual eligible and being a little bit more of a proven commodity, even though he has yet to actually break out. But those are the types of things you're trying to look at, right, for viable holds. Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
You never remember when you streamed a guy and he had pretty consistent output and whatnot, then you dropped him and you forgot him. You will do that many times in a season. You will remember when you added a player and they had an absolute stinker. You will remember when you had a player and they absolutely popped off. We obviously are trying to get the quality guys on your team. We're trying to give you quality content so that you can find those guys. I'm just going to read off a couple of things, though. I remember one of the box scores, and that night just stuck out so clearly to me. Off the top of your head, would you rather have a player that got you one assist or 4 shots, or would you rather have a guy that got you 1 goal, 1 assist, 7 penalty minutes, and 3 hits? The second guy kind of sounds better, right? He got you more points, he got you more everything. The first guy was Zach Hyman. The second guy was Klim Kostin. On a day-to-day, night-to-night, it's a crapshoot on which guy's going to get you the points. A fourth liner could score the game winner. First liner could have a bagel. What we're trying here is to maximize what we know, what we can affect, what we can see. So trust the guys with a run on the guys who are getting that trust from the coach, are getting that power play time, they're getting that deployment. But if Klim Kostin's going to outscore frickin' Draisaitl on a night, you can't chase that because it won't happen consistently every night. And if it did...
I'm going to give the listeners a caveat there, though, Jay. the elite are the elite. Like Matthews is who we thought he was. McKinnon is who we thought he was. McDavid, Draisaitl, both had points even though they lost 8-1. These are the guys that are not replaceable and should always be in your lineup no matter what the matchup, no matter what is happening. Even Bedard, like Bedard's off to a hot start already in his young career and looks the part, right? Like elite speed, elite release. A lot of people are projecting him beyond that 70-point threshold. I think that's probably where he falls just based on who he's playing with. But the guys that, like even Braden Point, great start to the season, right? He is who we thought we are. We're talking the guys that are value above replacement to your bench. Two things: maximize your schedule, maximize your game played against your opponent, and give you an opportunity to win week in and week out, right? That's a solid one for week two. I think there's a lot of exciting stuff with the first gambit of teams with four games played, which is always exciting, which opens up more streaming opportunities on off nights. Thank you all for listening, as always, and the support out there in the fantasy hockey community and in the five-hole fantasy hockey community. Please give us a like and five stars and subscribe on wherever you get your podcasts. Join us in the five-hole fantasy hockey Discord, huge community of like-minded fantasy hockey individuals, always chatting everything from life to hockey to fantasy hockey every day at all hours of the day. You'll find myself, Jay, and Alan in there actively chatting it up as much as we can. The mailbag is open, so please reach out to us on Discord, through Twitter, with any of your fantasy hockey questions, and we'll happily get them into the upcoming mailbag episode. Be on the lookout early next week for something spicy from the Taxi Squad with our 2023, with our Boldy Fairs, that's right, our Boldy Fairs episode with our fellow co-host Matty K joining us there. We will be back very soon with another exciting episode, looking later next week at next weekend's preview. Jay, we will turn off the fairs and we will see everybody. Good night. It's all love. We will park the van cab for now.
Shout out to Brooke in Wisconsin. Thanks for listening.
We'll pick you up later.